Philippians chapter 1, verses 18 to 21, a commentary by John Calvin, read by Mark Fitzpatrick. What then? Notwithstanding every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is preached, and I therein do rejoice, yea, and will rejoice. For I know that this shall turn to my salvation through your prayer and the supply of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, according to my earnest expectation and my hope, that in nothing I shall be ashamed, but that with all boldness, as always, so now also Christ shall be magnified in my body, whether it be by life or by death. For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. Verse 18. As the wicked disposition of those of whom he has spoken might detract from the acceptableness of the doctrine, he says that this ought to be reckoned of great importance, that they nevertheless promoted the cause of the gospel, whatever their disposition might be. For God sometimes accomplishes an admirable work by means of wicked and depraved instruments. Accordingly, he says that he rejoices in a happy result of this nature, because this one thing contented him if he saw the kingdom of Christ increasing, just as we, on hearing that the impure dog Carolus was scattering the seeds of pure doctrine at Avignon and elsewhere, we give thanks to God because he had made use of that most profligate and worthless villain for his glory. And at this day we rejoice that the progress of the gospel is advanced by many who, nevertheless, had another design in view. But though Paul rejoiced in the advancement of the gospel, yet had the matter been in his hand, he would never have ordained such persons as ministers. We ought therefore to rejoice if God accomplishes anything that is good by means of wicked persons, but they ought not on that account to be either placed by us in the ministry or looked upon as Christ's lawful ministers. Verse 19. As some publish the gospel with the view of rendering Paul odious, in order that they might kindle up against him the more rage of his enemies, he tells them beforehand that their wicked attempts will do him no harm, because the Lord will turn them to a contrary design. Though they plot my destruction, yet I trust that all their attempts will have no other effect but that Christ will be glorified in me, which is a thing most salutary to me. For it is evident from what follows that he is not speaking of the safety of the body. But whence this confidence on the part of Paul? It is from what he teaches elsewhere in Romans 8:28, that all things contribute to the advantage of God's true worshippers, even though the whole world with the devil, its prince, should conspire together for their ruin. That he may stir them up to pray more ardently, he declares that he is confident that the Lord will give them an answer to their prayers. Nor does he use dissimulation, for he who depends for help on the prayers of the saints relies on the promise of God. In the meantime, nothing is detracted from the unmerited goodness of God, on which depend our prayers and what is obtained by means of them. Let us not suppose that because he joins these two things in one connection, they are consequently alike. The statement must therefore be explained in this manner. I know that all this will turn out to my advantage through the administration of the Spirit, you also helping by prayer, so that the supply of the Spirit is the efficient cause, while prayer is the subordinate help. We must also observe the propriety of the Greek term, for it is employed to mean the furnishing of what is wanting, just as the Spirit of God pours into us everything of which we are destitute. He calls him to the Spirit of Jesus Christ to intimate that if we are Christians, he is common to all of us, inasmuch as he who was poured upon him with all fullness, that according to the measure of his grace he might give out as so far as is expedient to each of his members. Verse 20. Should anyone object, from what do you derive that knowledge? He answers, from hope. For as it is certain that God does not by any means design to frustrate our hope, hope itself ought not to be wavering. Let then the pious reader carefully observe this adverb, secundum, according to, that he may be fully assured in his own mind that it is impossible but that the Lord will fulfill our expectation inasmuch as it is founded on his own word. Now he has promised that he will never be wanting to us even in the midst of all tortures if we are at any time called to make confession of his name. Let therefore all the pious entertain hope after Paul's example, and they will not be put to shame. We see that in cherishing hope, he does not give indulgence to carnal desires, but places his hope in subjection to the promise of God. Christ, says he, will be magnified in my body, whether by life or by death. By making express mention, however, of the body, he intimates that amongst the conflicts of the present life, he is in no degree doubtful as to the issue. For we are assured as to this by God. If, accordingly, giving ourselves up to the good pleasure of God, and having in our life the same object in view as Paul had, we expect, in whatever way it may be, a prosperous issue, we shall no longer have occasion to fear lest any adversity should befall us. For if we live and die to him, we are his in life and in death. Romans 14 verse 8. He expresses the way in which Christ will be magnified by full assurance. Hence it follows that through our fault he is cast down and lowered, so far as it is in our power to do so when we give way through fear. Do not those then feel ashamed who reckon it a light offence to tremble when called to make confession of the truth? But how much ashamed ought those to feel who are so shamelessly impudent as to have the hardihood even to excuse renunciation. He adds, as always, that they may confirm their faith from past experience of the grace of God. Thus, in Romans 5, verse 4, he says, experience begets hope. Verse 21. Interpreters have hitherto, in my opinion, given a wrong rendering and exposition to this passage. For they make this distinction that Christ was life to Paul and death was gain. I, on the other hand, make Christ the subject of discourse in both clauses, so that he is declared to be gain in him both in life and in death. For it is customary with the Greeks to leave the word to be understood. Besides that this meaning is less forced, it also corresponds better with the foregoing statement and contains more complete doctrine. He declares that it is indifferent to him and is all one whether he lives or dies, because having Christ he reckons both to be gain. And assuredly it is Christ alone that makes us happy both in death and in life. Otherwise, if death is miserable, life is in no degree happier, so that it is difficult to determine whether it is more advantageous to live or to die out of Christ. On the other hand, let Christ be with us, and he will bless us. He will bless our life as well as our death, so that both will be happy and desirable for us.